is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Monday edition of The Drive. A beautiful day. Last couple of days have just been absolutely gorgeous, gorgeous weather. Hope everybody is enjoying it. It's still not even spring break. It feels like it today. Next week is spring break for the university.
Right?
Did you know that?
Spring forward to Sunday.
Yeah, okay. That is right. During spring break is spring forward. That's right.
I had forgotten what the sun looked like for the most part after these last couple of months. And so it was, especially with some of the places I've traveled to.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
And so it was... Yeah, the last few days of warmth have been okay for me, especially when maybe the results on the floor haven't gone as anticipated.
Oh man, it was
for
a rough
team.
Week. Yeah, right. I mean, you took a double dose.
You know what? That's part of the thrill of competition, right? Is that you don't know how it's going to go.
That's right. That's why you play them.
And for Troy, yeah, we were in. Brian, we were in competition.
You were in the driver's seat, weren't
well,
you?
Well, we were tied for first. So we went into Friday tied for first in the conference. One game left, going down to Mobile to play South Alabama. Georgia Southern was also in first place. They were looking to win the league for the first time in program history. So both teams needed a win, and if one team won and one team lost, then the team that won got to claim it. Outright.
Right.
If both teams lost, they would also get to claim the conference
still
title
get
that
to,
way.
Get to hang a banner.
Be a weird celebration on the way home, to lose and then find out after you lost that you won the conference title. But yeah, just it wasn't in the cards Friday night for Troy. South Alabama played a great game, and Troy it was really close.
I mean,
it was
pretty much the entire game, wasn't it? I mean, we were checking mm-hmm. while we were on, and it was a high scoring first quarter. Wasn't it something like 25-18?
Cooled off. Both teams cooled off for an extended period of time in the second quarter, and one team cooled off for an extended period of time in the fourth quarter, and it was not South Alabama. And so, yeah, Jags upset Troy, and that's got to be huge for on Senior Day to be able to stop your rival from winning the conference title on your floor and rain on their championship parade. Got to be huge for that program. They play tomorrow in Pensacola. Like, talk about a quick turnaround.
Yeah,
like,
no kidding.
For first round action in Pensacola in the Sun Belt. So, yeah, it's disappointing, but the Trojans are, I think that a week off, especially for a team that's been playing high level ball all year, I think a week off isn't the worst thing in the world. And they go straight to the semifinals with the way the tournament bracket sets up in Pensacola. The Troy men won the league outright on Friday night, so Scott Cross, back-to-back conference championships for Scott Cross and the Troy men's basketball team. They're going to play. So there's four games on Sunday in Pensacola. There's two men's semifinals, two women's semifinals. The women start the action. Troy's going to play. The women play in the second semifinal, and then the men play in the first men's semifinal. So games two.
So back-to-back games with Troy being represented.
Games two and three on Sunday. So yeah. I would hope a lot of Cardinal in the house in Pensacola on Sunday with both programs in action. So yeah, hopefully I'll be able to come back from Pensacola and have some celebratory stories to tell you guys about.
Not the same with Auburn basketball.
Tried to Man. Hold off. I really tried to stretch the Troy segment.
Rough performance from the Tigers on Saturday night over at Neville Arena. I mean, it hurts even worse when it's at home, when you're a 10-plus point favorite, and you have a couple of opportunities. I mean, you get a lead in the first half and can't hang on. Then you get out to a 6 or 8 point lead in the second half and feel like, okay, you're about to take control. And then watch Ole Miss, a team that had lost 10 straight games, had not won since Auburn beat them.
Right.
I mean, Auburn started their
back
losing streak. Auburn ended their losing streak.
These are Division I college basketball players, and I don't care what Ole Miss's record is. If you are making mistakes that give them open shots,
yep.
What's going to happen? Right? I mean, I don't care if they've won.
Well, it's especially against Auburn, it seems like if you give a team open shots, they're going to hit them.
Sure.
But Auburn continues to give teams open shots.
But I would say a bigger part of the problem is that Auburn gives teams more open shots.
Than that's anyone. What I mean. They continue to give teams open shots.
And I mean that's how you find yourself, you know, with you know in the what is it? Is Auburn's ranked somewhere in the 340s?
341, I believe now.
In opposing 3-point percentage.
Yeah. Yes.
And, I mean they've been last in the conference basically since the first week. Since Georgia
hasn't gotten better.
No.
It's like the percentages have continued to rise for the opposition.
And I heard a theory over the weekend from a coach watching some of the Auburn Ole Miss game that they thought, and they didn't want to say this has been a problem in a lot of the games, but they thought it was on display against Ole Miss, and they raised the possibility that this has been a problem in a lot of the games defensively, is that you saw guys making bad gambles. Right, it was like, oh, he's gonna go for that steal instead of maybe make. It's like it was almost like guys are making the play that might help them statistically, and instead of making the defensive the less flashy, more defensively sound play, that yeah, you're less likely to get a steal, but you're also less likely to give up an open shot if you do it that way. And just, I mean, we said like as bad as the number of as bad as the three-point percentages, as frequently as teams hit from the outside, I don't even think that number tells the story of how often teams are open from the outside when they shoot those shots.
No, like, but Dan, it's not even just outside. I mean, Auburn continues to give up a shocking percentage, inside as well. So I mean, it has just been a terrible year defensively for Auburn basketball. Period.
47 points in the second half against Auburn.
Yeah,
which is less than the whole game.
That's right.
A couple months earlier, it's just it's just the same thing over and over again.
Well, but it almost appears to be getting worse.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like and it's I guess it's
oh
I
it's
guess
gotten
it's,
worse.
I guess it's understandable. You know, the more you lose, the worse it gets.
It wasn't happening. Even in January.
No. The month of February. Has Auburn had a worse month in a decade than they did in February?
Since the Dark Ages?
1-7 in the month of February?
Probably not. I mean, especially after the January they had, right? And some of the wins they were able to collect in that first month of conference play.
You're 14-7 at the end of January, and you're either ranked or just outside the top 25, but your RPI is very high. I mean, you know, you're a shoe-in for the tournament going into February.
You're 14-7, and you look at a couple of the losses like A&M and Georgia as games that you let slip away. Yeah, I don't think you look at Oklahoma and Mississippi State and Ole Miss as games where it's like, oh well, Auburn was the better team and they let it slip away in the last few minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, like you could maybe say about A&M, and you could, you know, even what was the lead against Alabama? Right, Auburn was up double digits late in the first half of that game,
right?
And things slipped away. This hasn't been about, you know, this has been about a team getting outplayed and outworked by teams that left the bubble a long time ago. And that's, I don't know, that's I think it's especially distressing to think that you went from playing at a significantly higher level earlier this year to where you are now. Like, that's with it wanting to be reasonable about the situation, but an indictment of Steven and the rest of the coaches would be that this team was playing much better basketball earlier in the year. And now, especially for a team with no continuity and, you know, the thought that things maybe would continue to progress and gel the more they got to play together. Instead, you look at the first week of conference play and say, oh no, they were playing much better basketball then than you saw over the last 2 weeks of the month of February. Right, which is, I mean, and obviously some of that's going to be, you can point to personnel. And when things go well, you point to personnel. So when things are slipping away, obviously you point to personnel about that. But it's, you only get to point to personnel so many times, right, before before it's somebody else pointing to the personnel and saying it's making those important decisions.
Yeah, and I mean then offensively, something that hadn't been a problem has become a problem here the last couple of ball games. That's turnovers.
It really has. Yeah, sloppy.
I mean, much sloppier offensively. So I mean, it's Auburn is stumbling to the finish line right now. And look, we've got a late night game tomorrow night. I'm really going to be interested in the crowd. I thought there was a pretty darn good crowd there. Saturday
not bad,
night.
But not it was not.
No, forward. No, but it was still pretty good for a team that had lost 6 out of 7. Now they've lost 7 out of 8. They've got a 9 o'clock tip tomorrow night. And if they don't win tomorrow night, they're going to finish with a sub-500 record. They're going to finish this year with a losing record after being 14-7 at the end of January.
And a losing record at home in SEC play.
That's right.
They would be 4-5 in 9 SEC games at Neville with a loss to LSU, which just seems unthinkable when you think about the success Auburn enjoyed over the last 7 or 8 seasons in men's basketball, especially at home in SEC play. So, yeah, it's a red alert, and I think regardless of how this turns out, you know, if Auburn can navigate their way into the NCAA tournament, or if if the implosion continues, I think something else that makes it, you know, as bad as the numbers are, Bill, like if you felt like Auburn was surging in February and they had played their way into this position and they were trying to crawl their way out, and it's like, oh, you're going to finish just below 500, but you were playing your best ball towards the end and you just fell just short of the NCAA tournament, that would leave you with a different feeling than what you have have here. And I think regardless of how the bubble picture turns out, regardless of whether or not Auburn makes it or doesn't, or we had someone call weeks ago about the NIT. You know, I've heard more of that buzz lately about, you know, what kind of postseason would there be if Auburn isn't in the tournament. I think regardless, you're asking the question, what do you need offseason to fix this?
The thing is, if you finish with a losing record, do you think you're going to get an NIT bid? You think you get an NIT bid at like 15-17 or 16-17?
I think the NIT
does. If you
win
a game in the NCAA, in the SEC tournament?
I think the NIT does take major conference teams that are below 500 now because the field has expanded somewhat.
I can't imagine anybody being excited about being in the NIT if you lose these last two. Lose 9 of your last 10 and then be in the NIT.
I wonder the benefit, too, for sort of.
I do, too.
For mid-major programs that want to be able to continue their season and maybe didn't come in with those same sort of expectations, that's one thing. For a team coming off of a Final Four, like I could see them deciding to pull the plug on the season if they're not in the NCAAs. I don't know. I think that would be an interesting thing to sort of gauge, you know, how the players feel about that if Selection Sunday does not go their way. But I think, and I want to get Brian in on this, like if. Regardless of how this turns out, right? You get into the question of who's coming back,
what is on tap next year? What is next year going to be like?
What do you need to go get? I think that's the big question that decides.
Well, what do you need to go get? It's going to depend on who's coming back.
They really need a core of the younger players, the more dependable players, the players that you would list as guys who are not getting in trouble, who have high character. He needs those guys back, and he needs to be able to build a roster around those guys, right? I know Sebastian Williams Adams is probably not going to score 20 points a game for Auburn next year, but you know, a year later he's going to be a ferocious rebounder.
I'm hoping he's at Auburn to do whatever next year,
right? You can see the progress Philip Jovic's made already this season, and you would assume that he's going to take even more steps forward in year two if he can return to Auburn, and you know. Having Elijah Freeman and his incredible upside athletic ability would be huge for this team next year. I think Kevin Overton's coming back. He's a really dependable guard that can light it up from outside when he's hot, you know, can play some defense. That's a guy you'd love to have back. But, I think Stephen Pearl wants to have a more defensive team, a longer team, a team that can create offense out of defense.
How about this? Think about how many of the players on this year's team And it is sort of ironic that you've had two of the upperclassmen, in fact, two of the seniors with D1 experience, major conference experience, are two of the guys that have had to get, you know, been disciplined in the last couple of weeks.
Well, you're only two guys that had multiple SEC experience, years of SEC experience.
Well, maybe that was part of the that was a miscalculation, leaning on so many guys who were making the jump to the SEC for the first time, to Division I for the first time. It's and it was, you know, maybe it's an investment, right? Because if those guys stick around and blossom, whether it's Sway or Freeman or Jovich, like if any of those guys were to, like, it could end up paying off. But I think we've seen the learning curve, and that doesn't even get into the guys that aren't in the rotation anymore that you're not seeing at all. I would think that maybe two things that Steven would prioritize next year. Certainly depends on who's coming back, but I would think that major conference experience and a track record on defense in major conference basketball, like, those are two things that you maybe need to go.
Less risk when it comes to character issues too, I think. I just think they can't do this again, right? I just don't think, I think Bruce had a way of dealing with people that he could take.
He seemed to be able to handle some problem children, at times.
And I don't think that's a Stephen Pearl's style. It doesn't mean one is better than the other necessarily, but I think he needs different type of players.
Well, or he needs to have been around the players, for them to understand what to expect from him.
Yeah, it's hard to do that when players are just here for a year. If you're just buying a player for a year, it's hard to, hold them to all these, different discipline and rules and stuff. It's just really it's much more difficult than it was when you get a player for, 3 or 4 years and they can't just transfer in and out whenever they want to.
Want to take a break and talk a little baseball when we come
gladly,
back?
Gladly.
Yeah,
we'd love for you to join in, though. I mean, I know that quite a few folks want to get, air their feelings about the way things have been going in Auburn athletics and especially basketball. But yes, we will definitely talk some baseball. Give us a call on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, 334-321-1390. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. We're just underway here on the Monday Drive.
This is Coach Stephen Pearl, and you're listening to The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on Auburn.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews here in the studio. And again, we'd love for you to join us, 334-321-1390. Before we get to baseball, though, just thought, I think we said this off, while we were off the air, as disappointing as everything is, this is not, you don't make a change right now. There may be some changes, but I don't think you let a head coach go after 1 year unless there's some other underlying things other than just the record.
Yeah, I think pressure on Steven next season
will legitimately be there.
Is fair.
Yes.
Especially with the way February is going for his team in his first year. I think
thank God it's over.
What a
terrible month.
Thankfully it's not a leap year, right? We've had one more day of that month. If it was, I think this offseason, making the right moves this offseason.
This offseason's critical. It really is. I mean, it's very important because Auburn needs to make a step back next year.
Because you can, I think part of the reason why, and it's not scapegoating, it's not even blaming, but I think part of the reason why you can point to personnel for some of this team's issues is because a lot of these coaches were around making strategic decisions when you enjoyed the most successful period in the history of the program,
right,
including a Final Four run last year. And if you go make the right moves in this offseason and you bring in the right personnel, then potentially you could go back to enjoying those kind of results. If the issues are deeper than that, or if you can't go find, quote-unquote, the right personnel, and you're in this situation next year and you go from being, you inherit a program that went to the Final Four, granted with a blank slate, you know, with a whole new roster, but if you inherit that and you turn in two seasons where you're not really competitive with the top half of the conference and you play your worst basketball of the year in February, I think folks would be understandably concerned.
Yeah. There's going to be a lot of pressure on him.
Deep concern about the direction the program's going in.
Yes. I mean, just the fact that he came in without any other coaching experience, the fact that there was, you know, this thing that happened right before the season occurred.
That is not just a small thing. I don't know how many people I've heard over the weekend, and again today, say Auburn should have gone out and hired an experienced coach the day before practice starts.
It's impossible.
There aren't options available there.
If he's successful, nobody really cares about that necessarily.
Right.
But if he is not successful, everybody's going to talk about that over and over
again.
Right?
And that's what's happening right now.
You know, and on the point about Steven getting the job, like it doesn't buy him unlimited room to fail. I think that, you know, expecting results within 2 years is understandable. But I would say, and I said this when it happened, I think Bruce Pearl did win enough at Auburn and changed the fortunes of the Auburn program enough. It is the kind of situation where you do get a huge say in who the next coach is going to be in a way that maybe you don't in most circumstances in college athletics. But when you show up at a program and that had never been to the Final Four and you go twice, you show up at a program that basically never won the SEC regular season title.
Contended or won just about every year, you know, in the final few years that the coach was there. However, the way that this happened has had Bruce has caught, and I think we'll catch more flack just because of the timing of how it happened, because it felt, yes, I agree with you 100%. Bruce Pearl definitely should have had tremendous say-so in who replaced him. But it felt like there was no other option. I mean, and look, I can't say I wouldn't have done that for one of my sons. I mean, I can understand that, but the fact that it hasn't gone swimmingly this year, you know, has a lot of people, you know, not thrilled with the way it went down.
Didn't we always think, though, that had to do with if you retire earlier, the players can leave?
Yes.
Like, if you wait until several weeks into the fall semester and retire, the players are kind of their options are pretty limited as far as where they can go if they want to leave.
And Auburn still had to re-recruit those guys then to convince them to stick around even after classes had started.
And I'll say this, if Bruce Pearl retires in August and you go outside the program and hire a new coach, what does that do to the roster of players that signed to play for Bruce?
Like, who knows?
I mean, you could have, like, maybe if you're angry that Bruce Pearl didn't make up his mind the weekend of the Final Four, right? Oh, he should have known within 48, because that's when we're talking about, like, assembling a roster and going out and recruiting in the portal. You know, I think there's, you know, he had a lot on his mind in the 48 hours following his team losing in the Final Four, and I can understand why it would take
a little
bit longer.
Well, the portal was already open during that time.
That's right.
Signed Keyshawn Hall
during the tournament. Yes. Yeah. So, anyway, we'd love to hear from you. We'll get to baseball here in a little bit, but your calls come first. Let's get to the phones.
Bill.
Hey, guys. I've got an opinion on this. I'm going to throw it out there. I don't, you know, whether Coach Pro decided to retire or not, it's neither here nor there at this point. Personally, I think a team just needs to call it a season. I don't think they've played as a team in quite a while. There's obviously some internal something going on there. We're not at practice. We don't know. But obviously, there's something going on in there. So, going to postseason, I think it's a waste of time. I need to just put this thing to bed and call it a year. As far as Steven Pearl, I don't think – I don't know who recruited this team. I don't know if the dad did or he did or it was a joint venture. Either way, it hasn't worked. I thought early on, 10 guys being recruited from all over. What is the likelihood they're actually going to mesh together as a team? Obviously, that hasn't happened. I think Steven Pearl needs to be given a chance to recruit his own team if he didn't recruit this one. players of his own choosing and see if he can resurrect this thing. And like I said, I just don't think his team has played as a team in quite a while. Whatever's working at the beginning of the year, not working now. But that's all I got. I just I do think he needs to be given a chance to see what he can do. And like I don't know who recruited this team, his dad or him, but I'd like to see him get a chance to see what he can do next year.
Well, I think that's going
good
to happen.
Stuff, Bill.
Yep. And I just think, and I wrote about this for today, but I just think it's a complicated issue when you look at all the facts, right? Certainly the team has not performed well. Certainly the team has gotten worse down the stretch of the season. They're not responding to the things that he's asking them to do, which is definitely something to be concerned about. But then again, you have a team that was, you know, built for Bruce Pearl. I can go back to last summer, Bruce Pearl talking about the team, wanting it to be fast-paced and play more players. So, you know,
he was totally talking about style. Playing 10 yes. guys and, yes. and you know, just going back to being a fast team, yep. not a slow half-court team right. the way Auburn had been the last couple of years.
Three of those players aren't playing, two injured, one disciplinary issues. That, you know, you cannot play a full-court game with seven players. That's impossible. They can barely get through a game the way they are playing now, half-court-wise, with seven players, right? You can tell they're worn out at the end of the games, and that's when they commit a good portion of their turnovers, in my opinion. So, you know, you've got some reason to say, hey, let's see what he can do when he goes out and gets his type of players in the portal or whatever, and, you know, how that team can develop under his guidance next year.
334-321-1390. We'll get to Yellowhammer before we get to our bottom of the hour break. What's up, Hammer?
Hey, afternoon. So I want to make a point, but first I want to be sure I know what I'm talking about, so I wanted to ask some questions. Playing defense in basketball is more physically draining than offense. Would you say that?
Yeah, I think that's a fair generalization.
Yeah. And then next question, is there anybody on our schedule who has fewer available players? You know, we have seven players, and that's kind of down at the bottom of the level.
Well,
there,
how about this? You very rarely see anyone go with six.
Right.
Right? So you're not going to see anybody with fewer, but you might see
– Oklahoma only played seven.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I think a lot of teams are playing eight by now anyway.
Right.
You know, that's just the way it goes.
But I think this was a team – hold on, though, Yellowhammer, because I do think this was a team that maybe had aims of running and trying to outscore teams and leaning on its depth. And because I think for a variety of reasons that hasn't worked out, and now they find themselves using seven.
You got players that just are not good defensive players. Like Keyshawn Hall is a great offensive player, but he's not very good on the other end of the floor. He's just not. I know he came here to get better at defense, but it's, you know, if he's made steps, they're small steps.
Well, my point then would be depth equals energy, and so at the end of the game, if you have less depth, you're likely to have less energy. And so the other team will cruise on by you toward the end. It's like in football, you know, you gas the other team's defense and you go on by and win. And so I'm just trying to make the point then that there's really nothing too wrong with the players or the coaches. They just don't have enough players.
Yeah, here's the problem, Yellowhammer, is that I think I was making the case that fatigue was a big part of the problem earlier in the year. Now this team is getting blasted in the first 5 minutes of games, and that's got nothing to do with fatigue, and that's got nothing to do with depth, right? Like that's preparation. That's I mean teams are how many open threes on the first?
Yeah.
Goodness, it seems like
it was five of the first six were Ole Miss, and I think one of those was contested.
Yeah, I think that is six times here in the last eight games that an opponent's got a wide open three on their first possession.
Yeah.
I think depth and fatigue is part of it, but you know, we've seen some things lately you can't explain with depth and fatigue.
We got to guard. We got to close out. We got to do this better to stop three pointers. And then they don't do it. And they don't do it again and again and again and again. It's just disappointing, I guess, as you could say.
So there's a problem with a defensive scheme a little bit too. Then maybe
I just think it's the players not doing what the coach asked him to do. Is that the player's fault for not doing it, or is it the coach's fault, for not having
not realizing they can't do it? I don't know.
But you can't replace them because you only got seven of them.
No, but maybe you can change philosophies a little bit. I don't know. Good stuff, Yellowhammer. Appreciate the call. We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join in. Yes, we'll get to baseball, but love to hear from you as we continue with the Monday Drive.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware.
And Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews here in the studio. And goodness, we have a special guest joining us here on the Drive Hotline.
Drive Hall of Famer and somebody that, that got to enjoy a very big weekend for the second year in a row.
Is it John Longshore?
It is.
Oh, God.
Ouch.
That was Brian, of course.
I just had – I'm sorry.
Yes. He was busy, yes. So we're calling Barry, as a matter of fact. The voice of the Troy Trojans – getting to watch Scott Cross and company celebrate a Sun Belt championship for the second year in a row this weekend before Troy heads to Pensacola. Barry McKnight is our guest on the show, and someone that you guys have met Barry before, right?
Once or twice, I think. Yeah. It's been a while. I haven't seen Barry in a while, though.
Go back like two generations.
Go back to the days of the old Gentry building, Barry. Yes, that's right. When this was
a long time ago.
Oh.
But yeah, Bill is one of the main reasons why I am an Alabamian, to be honest with you, from way back when. It's a story of woe and heartbreak and all that. But it is true. I have been around you guys for a long time. There's no doubt. We're all old.
And Barry's much less worse the wear than all the rest of us from all that. Yeah, it's amazing.
He looks like he's in his 30s still. What's going on with him?
Yeah. I think we can end it right there because I'm not sure there'll be a higher point in this entire visit than that.
Not for you, but no kidding.
Well, Barry, we could continue with the heartbreak and woe stuff, but we've talked a lot of Auburn men's basketball already these first couple of segments on the show, and you were able to watch and the job Scott Cross has done of reinvigorating Troy men's basketball and having them play at a level that I think is it
five straight 21 seasons now?
Five straight 21 seasons, and now back-to-back regular season titles, Barry. I mean, what can you say about Coach Cross and the job he's doing?
Well, the main thing about it, besides just the wins, not only five straight 20-win seasons, NCAA tournament last year back-to-back, but also 10 straight years of double-digit conference wins, something that hasn't happened in Troy, to that consistency in a long, long time. And you wonder, well, what's been the key? What has been the hallmark of it all? And it's just that. It's consistency. Consistency and expectation from the players in terms of effort, consistency in terms of the coaches, consistency in terms of the approach. Among coaches of any sport in Division I athletics, he is as consistent every day in and out as any coach that I've been around in a long time, and I've been around some great coaches. Everybody knows what's expected of them. Everybody knows what what the day is going to look like. There are very few surprises in terms of the demands placed upon him, the expectations placed upon him. And one of the things I remember somebody saying many, many years ago, I think it was actually Bobby Bowden, who says in terms of coaching, basically you get what you demand. And he demands a lot, and yet again he delivers a lot. And the players, if you play for him, you're going to win a lot of games. You're going to be asked to do a lot, but there's success at the end of it all.
And one thing that is amazing is in these days of the transfer portal and NIL, consistency is much harder to achieve because turnover on your roster is much more likely than ever.
You ask any coach, Bill, in the Sun Belt Conference, and it's probably around three or four for the best teams in the conference in terms of the guys every year that you know you're going to lose to the portal. Even, you know, Coach Cross won it last year, and he loses Tayden Conaway, the player of the year, to Indiana, and he loses Jackson Fields to West Virginia and all that. Even the best coaches, even the most successful coaches in this league, you can count on three or four of the guys with eligibility left that are going to be going somewhere else. So you're right. To be able to consistently, you know, sustain excellence when you know even in the best circumstance, you're going to lose three or four guys beyond your graduates. That's you cannot overstate just how difficult that is.
And the Trojans well represented on the Sun Belt, the Sun Belt Awards that we got earlier today. Mm-hmm. Scott Cross and several of the players being recognized by the league.
Yeah, and there's different stories in all of those. Coach Cross, it's the second time he's won the league. Before, he won it when he was at UT Arlington many years ago. Thomas Dowd, who's a Dothan High School product, 6'8" forward, first team, all Sun Belt Conference, one of the great kids out there. And Victor Valdez made third team. He's from Monterrey, Mexico, and is kind of a unicorn himself. He's 6'7", 235 pounds, and a big, strong guy, leads Troy in scoring, but he's also third in the league in assists. You know, it reminds you a little bit, just the game of Luka Doncic, big, strong, you know, bulky, but has a really good eye for things. And those are two guys who really kind of set the tone. Dowd is just the hardest playing guy you'd ever want to see. Bill, you remember Tyler Hansbrough when he was North Carolina? They called him Psycho T.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
This guy is that kind of a guy. I mean, he plays every play hard, and then at the end of the game, you got Valdez with his size and his ability to get to the rim and his ability to draw fouls. He's kind of the closer on this team, so I think all of that's well-deserved.
Pensacola, Troy in action on Sunday, going straight to the semifinals, both men and women's basketball. What are you expecting out of the men's bracket? Who stands out as teams to watch out for as the Trojans get ready to play again this weekend?
Well, it's odd because you know the schedule. The tournament bracket is invented specifically with the ideal that you don't have any upsets, that your best teams in the league in the regular season are not going to get upset, and they'll play in the semifinals and the finals instead of, you know, somebody who gets hot late in there. The tournament starts on Tuesday, and there are teams that are going to have to play five games in order to get to the semifinals, where both Troy men and women get a bye through right there. I really like Arkansas State. I think that they played well in February for sure. Troy split with them this year. South Alabama is going to be difficult. They've got the player of the year in the league, and they lost a game on Friday. They had no business losing. But gosh, I like Troy. I like Troy's ability to shoot it from the outside. I like Troy's mental toughness, and so much of the postseason is mental toughness. But if I had to pick the final four in the tournament, I'd go Marshall and South Alabama, Arkansas State, and of course Troy.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing what the action holds in Pensacola. Yeah. Always just such a great time. Excited to see you down there. Real quick, Barry, Troy baseball having a pretty exciting season as well.
Well, yeah, as a matter of fact, I'm hopping on a bus tomorrow. We're going up to Nashville, Troy versus Vanderbilt. Already Troy has two Power 4 wins, a win over Georgia and a win over Rutgers out of the Big Ten last weekend. It's not really the consistency they want yet for Skylar Meade, but, you know, they've got a lot out of the transfer portal. They play Alabama in about a week and a half. That'll be a litmus test. No Auburn on the schedule this year for Troy, which is odd. But,
yeah, we were disappointed when we saw that.
Yeah, you know, I get over there, and, you know, since they changed the press box out there, I can't flick popcorn at the back of Brian Matthews' head because it's over there.
No, unless you've missed out on that anyway. You need some kind of weapon to launch something all the way down to where Brian is.
T-shirt gun.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding.
Barry, it's always great to spend a little time with you. Love to get your thought just from a distance, though, as to the situation with Auburn basketball. Obviously, fans are very, very emotional about this. I mean, going into the month of February, Auburn's 14-7 and a shoe-in for the tournament. A 1-7 February has changed everything.
You know, you mentioned this earlier when you're talking about how difficult it is to have consistency in this day and age. It's particularly true, like I pointed out, in the mid-major, but it is true everywhere. People talk about how much turnover Auburn had, and how Stephen Pearl has got virtually a bear cabinet and trying to build that and all that. And I get it. And I was willing to see him, gain some of the benefit of the doubt there. But they should be better than they are, especially in February. You know, the loss to Ole Miss, when you had so much riding on it, and just the nature of that loss against a team that lost 10 straight, I was willing to give Stephen Pearl the benefit of the doubt, because it's his first year, because obviously there's some questions in terms of culture and behavior on that team. But boy, they should be better than they are. They certainly should have looked better than they've looked over the past three or four games, and I can't really put my finger on why, but I absolutely do believe that all of the questions, all of the uncertainty from the fans, I think that's merited. It really is.
No, I agree with you. I mean, you would expect a team to improve, and this team absolutely is not. Barry, again, yeah, go ahead. You have something else?
No. I just think that the effort was the surprise against Ole Miss.
Lack of, yes.
This team had something to prove, and just the way they looked, goodness, there was no excuse for that.
No, you're right. Barry McKnight, a great broadcaster. He has won multiple awards for that, but you know what? An even better person, and we really appreciate you spending some time with us, Barry.
That's very true. Yep.
Right back at all of you guys. Appreciate it very much. Look forward to talking soon.
All right, see you, buddy.
Great guy, he really is. Barry McKnight joining us here on the Monday Drive. We'll get to our final break of hour number one. Open the phone lines back up. Come on in and join us here on The Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Pack. 390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Couple of minutes left here in hour number one. I was just looking to Brian. The state of Mississippi has done quite the favor for their in-state schools as far as athletes, passing a bill which will eliminate tax. There will be no tax on NIL for athletes in the state of Mississippi.
A really big advantage for those two programs.
That's a huge advantage. It would not thrill me if I was just a taxpayer in the state of Mississippi.
Yeah.
Who's probably not making anywhere near the kind of money that athletes are going to make.
But, you know, if you're an Ole Miss or Mississippi State fan, you're probably all for it. So,
until your state taxes are due.
Yeah.
But you love it when you're watching them win.
Yes,
you
absolutely.
Love it when you're watching the team
win. And it's a huge advantage for them now. I mean, look, in Alabama and, I mean, the surrounding states.
Yeah.
They're going to be taxed. Those players are going to be taxed on what they report for their NIL.
And then you grumble about it, you know, after the season's over when you get your tax bill, right? And you think, oh, I'm paying state income tax. And
yeah, sure you will. Aren't. Anybody who's figuring things now, hadn't done their taxes yet, is going, really? But, I mean, no, that is a huge, recruiting tool for Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Southern Miss, you know.
Very big.
Well, and Ole Miss is under a lot of pressure, you know, we're just talking about it with Bruce Pearl and Stephen Pearl. Mm-hmm. Like when you have a coach who rejuvenates a program, those next couple of years after he's gone are delicate. Like, are you gonna stay at your new level, or are you gonna
fall back?
And Ole Miss is desperate to avoid falling back.
Yes, indeed.
And I'm not shocked that they're implementing, they're utilizing whatever levers they can pull to make sure that doesn't happen.
All right, we're halfway done here on the Monday drive. When we come back, we'll let you know there's some adjustments to our schedule for this week. We'll let you know about that. But we've got a full hour for you coming up. We've got Brian's Monday Musings. Love to hear from you as well in hour number two of the Monday drive.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
It's hour number two of the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews here in the studio. And we are going to head to the Drive hotline here momentarily. 334-321-1390. Anything on your mind sports-wise? Got a feeling we'll talk some more basketball. Do want to let's at least quickly recap this past weekend. Where the Bats, there was concern, Brian, a little over a week ago.
Yeah, there was.
There was concern about the Bats.
There was.
I was figuring this, if my math is right, in Auburn's last 16 at-bats against Nebraska,
yes,
they scored 31 runs.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Good enough to win 2 out of 3.
Yeah.
Now, they did lose that first game when the bullpen exploded.
Right.
Wasn't anything wrong with the
top,
hitting,
top two
starting
bullpen
pitching.
Pitchers. They just gave up hits. Yeah.
Well, Nebraska, I'll tell you what, Nebraska's got a pretty good approach.
They have some power, yeah.
And Nebraska won that opening game 9-8 in a wild one.
In 10 innings, yep.
Yep. But then Auburn came back, run rules them on Saturday.
Mason McCrane had 6 RBIs Saturday.
And
incredible
it's the
job
SEC
by the freshman
of the week. Auburn back-to-back SEC freshman of the week. And
yep.
Ethan Bingaman and Mason McCrane. And then yesterday put them away again 12-3.
Yeah, almost another run rule there.
Yep.
Just – really great pitching, I thought, the last two games also from the starters. And
well,
from
I thought,
the
you know, the starters threw out again.
Yeah.
There was nothing wrong with Jake
Friday.
Yeah,
Jake was good.
I mean, he wasn't as dominant as he'd been, but he gave up 2 runs.
Yep.
You know, it's like, oh, gee, your starter gave up 2 runs. Well, that's just terrible. Then Jackson, but Alex yesterday, very impressive, I thought.
Yes, very, very good. And Just off to a great start, 3-0 on the season so far. Come back from 2 injured years. I'm going to write about him for tomorrow. But he's also one of the team captains and very important in that respect to this team.
Mm-hmm. So Auburn's, are they 9-2? What is their?
I think that's right. They are 9-2.
Yeah, that's what I thought, 9-2. Going into the game tomorrow night against Samford.
Samford tomorrow night starting at 6, and then they've got Winthrop for a 3-game series. Those times are 6-1.
And then next week, it's conference time. It's SEC play.
We are here.
Yep.
Here we go.
All right, we'll go ahead and get to the Drive hotline again, 334-321-1390, and Terry is up first this hour. Hey, Terry, how you doing?
Good, Bill. Hey, Dan and Brian, how y'all doing?
Great.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, speaking of college basketball in particular, I want you all three of you guys' opinion on something. Has the coach in waiting ever worked?
Yeah, Duke's guy is working.
Yeah,
I mean it's rare.
Rare,
it is. It really is.
I mean, I think there was a lot of there were a lot of questions about Shiler, right, and whether or not like that was gonna about whether or not shit was gonna work for Shiler at Duke because it had not worked at so many other places. But no, that's a fair question, Terry.
And then again, Dan, that's Duke. Let's be honest.
Right.
I mean, that's like saying Phil Jackson was a good coach. Anybody could be a coach when we got Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Shaquille O'Neal, and Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, but those guys didn't win when they had other coaches, right?
There was
something special. If it was that easy, somebody else would have been able to do it. And
that's always going to be the argument.
But so. I think that's something to, you know, especially in a day and age where it feels like you can make significant change over the course of 1 or 2 off seasons.
Mm-hmm.
You really need to if you're the coach in waiting and you get your opportunity, it's fair to wonder how patient people should be and how patient people will be. And we were just saying with, you know, throughout the first hour, Terry, like Stevens under, like I think trying to make a change this off season feels rash. It feels maybe a little bit it feels a little bit impulsive. He's under immense pressure to fix this next year and convince people this thing's headed in the right direction.
Now, I got a question for Brian there. Brian, if Stephen Pearl had went off to another university and been a head coach, do you think he even gets an interview at Auburn? And if he does, it's because his daddy was the coach?
Well, I think if he left and had a successful stint, I definitely think he would be a top candidate. But and I thought for all along that was the best thing for him. You know, you look what Todd Golden did he go to San Francisco?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, and turned that success there into mm-hmm. I believe the next job was Florida, right?
Right. Yeah, of course, the thing to keep in mind, Terry, is the timing of everything at just about any school. If the head coach announced the day before practice yeah. started that he was stepping down, it would be very difficult to go outside the program and find someone that you could bring in.
Yeah,
yeah, but this team should be better than they are, let's be honest.
Oh, I agree there.
Nobody's arguing that.
I definitely agree there.
Yeah.
I mean, they should be a lot better. And Stephen Pearl has done a lousy job. And he's a lousy coach. So, quite honestly, and I just think the guy could have went somewhere and got his feet wet a little bit. Mm. But he knew if he did that, Daddy couldn't get him the job. Take care, guys.
Appreciate
well,
it, Terry.
I mean, if Bruce had been back this year, you wonder if Stephen might have gone somewhere and taken a job if he thought Dad was going to be around for a few more years.
Right. It would have been a gamble. I think that folks said that when Bruce was the head coach.
Well, it's always a gamble when you've never been a head coach.
But with Stephen, the thought that like if he were to take a mid-major job, he would need to succeed there
yes.
in order to justify yeah. becoming Auburn's coach in a way that if he stayed on Auburn's staff, maybe he doesn't have to take that risk and go somewhere else. The flip
True.
Side would be, but with no track record, if this is head coaching
right.
job one, I mean, folks, you only get to learn so much on the job, right? Mm-hmm. Like before the expectations are like, you know, I think Stephen would have been a candidate no matter what following Bruce, you know, unless his tenure had just gone terribly somewhere else. But no, I think there's going to be understandably a ton of pressure on him to figure out how to navigate Auburn out of this.
334-321-1390.
Dan is up next.
Hey, Dan.
Hey, guys. You know, I was looking back at last year, and, you know, last year we had Jani Broome, who was one of the best shot blockers in the country, and you had Cardwell, who was, you know, equally as good, and then you had Chaney, who was a really good shot blocker, and then, you know, not even counting the shots that they blocked, you know, guys were afraid to go in there, and if they did, they were kind of throwing stuff up quick and missing shots because they were afraid they were going to get a shot blocked.
Yep.
And then this year, you know, your tallest guy is Murphy, and he, you know, for some reason, some games he can be dominant, and in some games he just totally disappears, which I don't really understand, you know, how a player can be so up and down. But he would be considered arguably your best shot blocker. But when he's not in the game, you're sitting there with, you know, two freshmen who are 6'8" that, you know, probably aren't going to block as many shots or know how to do it. You know, I think teams just – no, they're not going to get their shot blocked, so they all drive to the basket. And then I think our defenders collapse just because they can't help it because they want to help, you know. And then either the guy gets it up on the rim or
they kick it to the corner
to an open three. And
yeah.
they're obviously shooting phenomenal from outside. I think we just need some big guys that are not just skinny big guys, but, I mean, just a legitimate, true, big-time center.
Yeah. I think that'll be one of the number one priorities for Auburn in the portal. We'll be finding a rim protector. They've got to have that to play the way Stephen wants to play.
Oh, I think it should. And that's an interesting point, Dan, though, that got me sort of thinking, well, does that maybe sort of explain people wondering what happened to Stephen? Did he forget how to coach defense because he's been the defensive coordinator? But it sure helps when you've got guys like that that people just – they won't drive to the basket because you have that.
Yeah, and
then it's a whole lot easier to defend the perimeter if you're not worried about defending the middle.
There's no Denver Jones or even a Miles Kelly on this team guard-wise as far as defending, I don't think either,
no.
in my opinion.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can't defend a lot harder on the outside for sure. If you know you got those big guys behind you.
Oh, yes.
I mean, it definitely makes it a lot easier to be more aggressive and
you can take more chances.
You know,
exactly.
But I don't know. I think that's one of our biggest problems. But anyway, Appreciate it, guys.
Appreciate the call, Dan.
Good stuff.
334-321-1390.
Good stuff from Dan there. I think that's something to think of. I mean, I think how they prioritize defense in the portal this offseason is mm-hmm. going to be crucial. You know, how many of the – I mean, I would think you've got – well, Overton's got another year of eligibility.
He does.
And Andy has said on the radio call that Overton has expressed interest in coming back and playing another year at Auburn. So that's something to think about. You've got Jovich and Sway both contributing in the rotation in their freshman year. You've got Elijah Freeman, who's got 2 years left of college basketball. I mean, he's mm-hmm. in his sophomore year right now. Like you seemingly have rotation pieces for next year. Sort of what do you reasonably expect out of those players, and then supplementing the roster accordingly. What's got to be tough, Brian, is the guys like Walker and Magwood and Bashir and Aporum.
Yep.
Like, I don't know if you, especially with the way February's gone, I don't think you can go into next year feeling like any of those four are parts of your 8 or 9 man rotation when you didn't see anything out of them in this season that would indicate that they can be counted on to be, you know, that you can count on them in that to that degree.
Yeah, now maybe the coaching staff would feel good enough about one or two of them because they've seen some things that we haven't. But yeah, it's really hard to just expect that they're going to step in and be, you know, in the regular rotation. But, I mean, you know, the thing is, Emeka is a guy that I don't think they brought him in expecting him to play double-digit minutes this year anyway. I think they'd like to have him back, though, Brian, to see if he can progress and become that kind of, you know, rim protector guy that could give him some minutes. I'm not talking about going in and getting 15, 20 minutes.
I don't think you can bring him back expecting him to be a starter.
No.
But I think if he can be healthy and, you know, wants to return, I think he'd be a great guy to have as a developmental guy and see where he goes. Yeah.
And I wonder because Steven has talked, he's mentioned Bashir more than the other guys. When he talks about guys that have been out, he mentions him being out and not being healthy. Yeah. So it almost feels like he wouldn't mind seeing what a healthy Abdul Bashir could do.
But even if he was healthy, he lacked really the physicalness or the defense
acumen. Defense, it sure appeared to be lacking early.
I mean, he'd be having a lot of the same problems that there's a player. He would be another guy who could rotate in at least, though. But again, if he was to stick around a year in the weight program and a year to develop, maybe that would change. We'll see. But a lot of times these players, when they don't play, they're gone.
Yeah.
It's almost automatic.
I understand that. Yeah. I mean, they want to be somewhere where they feel like they're going to get minutes. We'd love for you to join us, 334-321-1390. We'll get to our first break of hour number two. Don't forget, we'll have Brian's Monday Musings somewhere along the way as well. So stick with us here on the Monday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. Or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, and Brian here on this beautiful Monday. I mean, this is great baseball weather. We talked a little baseball a while ago, and Auburn's off to a really good start. Softball playing pretty well, too.
Yeah, much more competitive, hitting the ball.
They are. They're hitting some homers. No question about it.
Fun to watch, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this baseball team, Brian, I mean, knew they were going to swing the bat. Again, man, there's so much young talent on this baseball team, the freshmen and sophomores.
Really, you know,
Chris Rimbert just getting back.
Now, Rimbert is eligible for the draft this year, so he probably most likely will not return.
But yeah, I would think
all those other guys you know, should be back, you know, assuming somebody doesn't you know, steal them away, as you can do now. Basically.
That is right.
But what's real impressive, to me, you know, this past weekend would be that, like, the reason folks were so excited about Auburn coming into the season was because of the returning production.
Yes.
The guys like Rembert and those bats.
Frelick and Bob Terrell, who's off to a – I mean, Frelick and Terrell are really off to hot starts.
But think about the new arrivals that made some play, right? Whether it's the McCrane
Ethan Bingaman, yep. and the improvement – tell you what, the improvement from freshman to sophomore from the pitchers.
Yes.
That has been, we talked about that back in the preseason that a lot of people don't realize. I mean, it is such a big step from high school to college on the mound, even more than it is for position players. And, you know, last year Christian Chatterton was, he was Auburn's leading returnee and innings pitch and ERA and all that. And he's pitching pretty well, but he's got other sophomores that are out there, you know, pitching ahead of him, getting starts.
Yeah. I think Jake Marciano was such a big pickup out of the portal for Auburn. He has taken over that Friday night role and looked terrific. Petrovic, who's returned from a couple of injuries, has stepped in there as a Sunday starter, has been really good. Jet Johnston has really improved from last year. He's concentrating on pitching now. He's not, you know, trying to hit two, and that's really allowed him to settle in there and be an important setup guy.
Oh, and we left before the end of the game yesterday, so I didn't get a chance to see Ethan pitch. I've been talking about that, but he came in and pitched the last inning, right?
Yeah, he did a little, you know, not quite smooth, but still got it
done.
Still
his
not
first
give up
collegiate
a run.
Appearance.
Yeah. Pretty good for a power hitter, though.
Right? Yeah. For a guy who was the SEC Freshman of the week before as a hitter. Yeah.
I mean Ethan Bingaman and the McCrane brothers both sound like villains from a Bonanza episode, right? But, I mean, I think that it sounds like Auburn's got some really exciting, like, young players, and that's another thing where –
it sounded like a law firm when I looked at the lineup the other day, and at the end it's McCrane, and Son, and I forgot who they're
– But Butch
McCrane,
has,
McCrane, and Steele or something like that. Was it?
Yeah. Butch's ability to identify guys that not only will fit in culturally and fit in from a chemistry standpoint, but guys that will be able to help him immediately.
Hey, but not just to identify, to be able to sign those guys. Because these are not all sleepers that nobody knew any. Chris Rembert was a big-time prospect. That is one of the things, though, that has changed with NIL that has helped college baseball. So much more. I mean, you look, and the Southeastern Conference is as good. It's better than lower minor league baseball, period, already. And the amenities that you're going to have as a college athlete as compared to living quarters and what you're going to get to eat and travel in the low minors, you're better off in college now that you're able to make as much or more. You're making more money than you would be for a lot of these guys in the minors. That's why they're not going ahead and signing, you know, professional contracts out of high school.
Yeah, I mean, the SEC has probably never been this talented.
No,
you're
right. From
top to bottom, right? So even though Auburn's got a great team, there's, you know,
probably nine others.
Yeah, that are really, really good too. And, you know, same across the country, right? So it's going to be a great league season, a great competition there. And, you know, I think Auburn is a team that will compete in the top half of the SEC and have a chance to advance all the way to Omaha. You know, sometimes there's a little luck that goes in. You got to get hot at the right time. Good teams sometimes don't make it.
Who gets to come if you get a chance to be in a super regional?
Yep.
You know, things like that. You never know. But the expectations are, you know, Auburn should be, you know, barring injuries or things like that, they should be, you know, in position to host a regional again, have a chance at a super regional. And if you do that, you've got a chance to go to Omaha.
You know, last year it was disappointing, but Coastal Carolina played all the way until final day of the season, right?
Right.
So that was a really, really good team, it turned out. Yeah, very good team.
Yeah, so tomorrow night, expect Dre Alvarez to get the start again?
Yeah, he is starting. It's Andres Alvarez, and the Sanford starter is a kid named Luke Boykin. No, I'm sorry, is Noah Berry. He hasn't started yet. He's been working out of the bullpen the first few weeks of the season.
Well, again, these games, you know, folks at times get a little concerned because they may be tight. I mean, everything to these teams that are playing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would think Auburn, there's no reason for them not to go out and play well tomorrow night. I mean, it's not like they don't have SEC action this week. They got Winthrop coming in. Winthrop's really good baseball program.
Yes, always.
But they've got a few days before they come in, so – It'll be interesting to see the lineup too, because you know a couple of guys that started the season in the lineup didn't get much, if any, action over the weekend.
Yeah.
But when you swing the bat, it's tough to pull. It's tough to pull somebody from the lineup when they're swinging the bat the way they are.
Butch says that you know the players make the lineup once the season gets going, and that's why Brandon McCrane and now Mason McCrane and Ethan Bigman are going to be in the lineup most of the times. That doesn't mean that Lucas Steele and Kay Ballou and Todd Clay aren't still going to get their opportunities, and they can maybe figure it out and get hot and work their way back in it, you know. Mm-hmm. But they need to be ready. They need to keep working behind the scenes. But, you know, you got to play the players that are producing at this time.
How far are we from conference play?
Next weekend. Yep. Next weekend. So softball starts conference play this weekend.
That's amazing.
Baseball next weekend.
I mean, I guess they have to do it to get the season done. You know, you gotta wait till it's warm enough to play, and then you don't want the season dragging too deep into the summertime.
Yeah.
But it feels like it just started.
I know it does. And you know, they go to Missouri the first weekend. It's a little cool up there, but Missouri's maybe the worst team. I don't know who the worst team this year, but they're near
the
bottom probably.
They've
right?
definitely been struggling.
But then after that, you come home and play Georgia Tech at home, and then Texas is coming to town, and that will be one heck of a series because Texas is loaded and one of the top teams in the country.
I think Auburn's pretty loaded themselves.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That should be
a lot of fun.
Long way. That's a long way to go,
yeah, that's
right?
still a couple of weeks away. But
I mean, it's going to be a great SEC slate, though, for Auburn, home and away. But Texas and Arkansas is your first two home series. That's pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, should be fun at the ballpark. No question about it. And yet Brian's down there, down the right field line. There were a couple of balls I thought were headed y'all's way.
Yes, there were. They had a few close ones, but have not been able to catch a foul ball yet, or I should say, duck out of the way of a foul ball yet.
Okay, yeah, where our seats are, they're just on the edge of the net, so we can get a little pop.
Yes,
that'll come over. Come over toward us. But yeah, fun at the ballpark. All right, it is Monday. Why don't we get Brian to run down today's Monday musing?
Yep, and I just talked about what we've been talking about, basketball, right? I wrote about Stephen Pearl and you know the issues involved with the way the team's playing right now, and but also that hey, this is not necessarily his team. He took it over the day before preseason practice, as you said, and you know. He is going to get, I believe, the opportunity to build the team.
I think he should. It would really take some almost special circumstances for someone not to make it.
I agree.
You know, into year two.
It would be great if they could play better these last two regular season games.
Oh yes,
really be great. But regardless, I think that's what's going to happen, and we'll see. I think really the most important thing for him after this season, as soon as it ends, is to retain the core group of players, you know, four or five of those guys, and then to get the right players in the portal to make this team much more competitive than it was this season.
And we've been reading stories, you know, for a week or so that so many players are already nobody can go officially into the portal until the day after the championship game. But if you wait until then to know
you're
who's
cooked
in the portal, you're toast. Yep. You're absolutely toast. So there's got to be a lot going on. Any word? I know y'all sort of broke the story about Steven hiring a GM. Is there any word as to when that might happen?
No, but very, very soon because, like you said, they've got a month, right?
Yeah, I think you'd like one well ahead of the portal.
So it'll be pretty soon. It'll be a guy that's probably already very familiar with what's happening right now in college basketball.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Hit the ground running, so to speak. So musical journey, we're going back 53 years. And, Bill, you're going to get this right away. We'll see
53 years to 73?
73.
Wow.
Okay. This definitely should be in my wheelhouse.
It's the release of the fourth best-selling album of all time.
Okay. I got it.
There's more to it, but that'll really give it away.
Set a record for longest time
on
the charts.
Yes, that's it. Yeah. That's it.
Dark Side of the Moon.
It's Floyd. Yeah, okay.
Yes. Yes. So,
What else were you going to give for context?
It was released on March 1st, 1973.
I didn't realize the release date.
Yeah, it was. It's been a record 996 weeks on the Billboard 200.
Were they already a big deal before Dark Side of the
Moon?
Not
as big.
No, not.
And this is like
they've been around.
This was their eighth studio album.
Wow, I didn't realize.
Yeah, I didn't realize that either.
I knew they'd had a few.
Yeah.
So what? what turned it from just another album by a band that had been around into a gigantic sensation? Was there a hit off of it that makes it?
Money was their biggest hit. Okay. Dun dun dun. Yeah. And Breathe in the Air, Time, Us and Them, Brain Damage, all that was on on that album. I mean, when I was growing up, right, in college, with your CD player in your car or whatever, you would just put this in anytime you drove somewhere sometimes, right?
Was Money a really big hit?
Money was.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
It's not my favorite, not even my top 10 of their songs for me, but yes, it was their biggest hit. And then they followed it up, I think it was two albums later, Another Brick in the Wall, which is just as classic Floyd as you can get and is an incredible album.
And, of course, you play the Dark Side of the Moon soundtrack to The Wizard of Oz.
Yes, of course,
Which, if they had somehow found a way to make an album that you could sync to The Wizard of Oz, it would have been a lot of work at the time, right? Because it wasn't like you had VCRs.
Yeah, and
like watching The Wizard of Oz wasn't all that easy in the early 70s. So, yeah.
Yeah, but yes, a great band, one of my favorites, and band I've listened to for many, many decades. Yep.
You can hear a couple.
Bill, did you ever see them in concert?
A couple Pink Floyd songs.
Yes, as a matter.
Of course you did. Of course you did.
Well, this was the story of Talladega and Pink Floyd at Legion Field on the same day.
Floyd and I, as a matter of fact.
Oh,
there you go. Wow.
Went to Talladega and Pink Floyd on the same day.
This was probably back in the 70s or 80s?
It was 80s.
Yeah, there's no way back then that I would have survived either one of those to make it to the other one. You know what I'm saying? There's absolutely no way.
I don't know how we did, to be honest.
There's no way.
I guess
it was Talladega during the day.
It was Talladega during the day and sunburned.
I'd have been done.
And it was hot.
Yeah.
And then it I don't know how, but it was cold. It was cold at Legion Field, probably because we were sunburned. But yeah, it was two of the most amazing sounds shows I've ever been to. With the feeling of the power of the cars at Talladega, and then the sound and everything, the whole show. It was the Pigs Fly tour, I think.
Did Earnhardt win at Talladega? Who won?
I have no idea who won the race. we had a great time. Yeah. All right, we need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Maybe Floyd remembers. I have no idea. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Got a half an hour to go. Still time for you to join us here on the Monday Drive. Oh, I'm sorry. I was texting.
Excuse us.
I was. I didn't realize. Oh, we're back here on this Monday edition of The Drive. I was responding to a question about Brian's Monday music.
Well, you can respond on the air because the person's listening.
Well, that's true. We were talking about the Pink Floyd concert.
That's right.
In Birmingham at Legion Field. 334-321-1390. Let's get back to The Drive hotline. And Philly Fanatic is up next.
Hey, I love Pink Floyd, too. Everyone talks about how bad the defense is, but the offense isn't a whole lot better. They're just standing around, dribble too much.
Yeah,
a good offense is a motion offense, continuously moving, quick hitters, pick and roll, screens, passes, bubble screens, driving quick, high-low, backdoor cuts. These are things that I learned in Philly playing basketball in junior high. I mean, there's just like nothing going on. It just slows down.
Philly, they wouldn't last a day at the Palestra playing like this, right?
No chance. Kick them out.
I think you're right. I think it's too much ISO. Probably, you know, I think that early on in the season, you felt like you could run a lot of things through Keyshawn Hall, and gradually that's become tougher and tougher, and teams are more comfortable defending it. And now feels like the ball gets stuck. When it goes to Hall and guys stand around, they don't really know where they're supposed to be. They don't know where they need to be, and it creates timing issues all over the offense.
Yeah, if you got guys standing, when you don't have the ball, your job is not to stand there. Their job is to move someplace and leave your guy who's guarding you screened or, you know,
yeah,
you
go screen somebody or something. You're right, and it has obviously, I think, as the struggles have mounted, it's gotten worse down the stretch.
Yeah.
Yeah, no question. So my muse describes the Auburn basketball. the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. Gordon Lightfoot.
Great song.
This is it. Does anyone know where the love of God goes when the team turns minutes into hours of agony? I mean, because that's pretty much what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, they can't get any worse.
Yep.
I don't know. Don't say that, Joe.
Yeah, we still got two more left.
Fellas, David, it's been good to know you, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm giving my basketball tickets away to anyone, I guess, because there's no way that I'm going to sit through another game. Like
9 o'clock game. I mean, think about this. First
no
of all,
way.
It's
no
not going to tip at 9. You know it's – I mean, there are multiple games on. They're trying to schedule them every 2 hours, so it's probably going to be maybe 9:15. So that means maybe 11:30 the game is over.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's great.
And I only live 15 minutes away, so it's till 12 o'clock. That's way past my bedtime.
Oh, I hear you.
It's like, no way. Anyway, we'll see. You know, what bothers me also is so far they only have one guy that's signing for next year, right? A freshman.
Mm-hmm.
Where these other teams that you look at, they've already have 3 or 4 guys signed.
Yeah.
So they have to go to the portal,
right? They do.
Although, you know what, though, Philly? Unless you're talking about a freshman that can step in and really make a difference, I do wonder how hard they need to be hitting high school recruiting this year because you need guys to contribute next season. You know, it'd be nice if high school recruiting was going well. If you had a guy that you were counting on,
it's Caleb Williams is a guard. He's about 6'5", but he's not like a top
he's like a four
top
star.
50 guy.
I mean, he's a top 200 or something. Yeah. But he may be able to help. But yeah, to Dan's point, it is much more difficult now for anyone to go out and sign players unless they feel like those guys have a chance, real chance of playing next year. The guys that have a chance of being one and dones, it's crazy. I mean, it's more like the old John Calipari at Kentucky days, where those are the kind of guys you want to sign, because signing someone to come in and be a developmental type player, you're taking a big risk, because the chances are you could help develop them and then they're going to go somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, I said this last week on the radio when I was singing the NIT. It's like Mickey Mouse, the NIT LOUSY, and that's Auburn's basketball team. No, I mean, I was saying back then that they needed anywhere from 3 to 4 starters to go along with what they have.
Yeah.
And remember we said, Brian, they need to go bigger?
Yes.
I made the thing that they miss Cardwell more than anything, and he didn't have the stats. But he just being there in the middle kept the other guys.
Yeah,
out.
You're right. I mean,
he around.
Yeah, I mean, he blocked, you know, such a high percentage of the shots when people did go in there. You're absolutely right, and altered, you know, so many of the others.
Well, they obviously need to put up some money, you know, to get these people. If they're going to get 3 or 4 starters and pay them probably at least $1 million each, that's a bunch of money right there.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, that's tough.
Anyway, I'm glad I don't have to watch Auburn. And at least when you're watching them on TV, you can walk away. But when you're sitting there and you've paid all this money to go, it's deflating. And like that Mississippi game with 3 minutes left, people were already leaving.
You're right.
Oh, yeah.
When has that happened before?
You're right.
You know, I know some folks that like the concourse up on the fourth floor for that reason, right? If you need to take a walk and collect your thoughts, you got some room up there, you know, near the top of the building to do
we
it.
We don't ever leave. I mean, we don't leave before the game's over. So we didn't have much trouble getting home. There wasn't much traffic by the time we were leaving.
Yeah, I mean, you get to the point where you have to foul to get the ball, right? And that team is going to make 2 points, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So when Auburn gets fouled, it's like a turnover because they don't make the shots, right? Hey, let's just foul this guy over here because he's not going to make them anyway. It's a turnover. As opposed, Ole Miss wasn't missing many at the end of the game. They held on to the lead. This was our year, I think. This game was so important to them because look at their old resume. You know,
yeah,
for next year.
In Philly, they weren't missing late. They weren't missing early.
No.
They didn't
exactly.
miss a ton in between either.
That's what teams play. They play their best when they play Auburn, it seems like. We saw that in football, too. These guys come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, they're stars.
Well, Brian and I were talking about that before we came on the air, and it's uncanny, and it's not very pleasant, the similarities from football and basketball season.
Yep.
Well, I always say, we got a great golf team, you know, we got a great tennis team, we got all these other what people consider minor sports. I mean, it's good that somebody's doing something. Yeah, I mean, is. Really. All right, well, it's good talking to you, and I want to watch it on TV and give my tickets away. I'll let you know if I can't find anybody. You can give them away on TV, on the radio.
Yeah, okay? Just let us know. We'll do it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, bye-bye.
All right, take care. 334-321-1390.
Want to get to Spectre?
Sure. Hey, Spectre.
I just got a few minutes with you. Listen, Brian, are y'all still doing the music trivia?
Yes. Yes, we are. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. I got one for you.
All right.
I promise not to hit your cell phone. Man. I mean, hit
okay.
your internet.
I anything, promise.
Right?
Yeah, okay.
Okay. All right. Bee Gees came out with a song called Jive Talking.
Yes.
But that wasn't the original name of the song.
Oh, I did not know
Can
this.
You give it
was,
it,
was it was it love? Was it love talking?
No, Dan, you got to get that mind out of gutter.
No, I thought for some. Well, I know a lot of their songs are, you know, they go straight to love and emotion in a lot of their songs, yeah. Right?
I don't know that. I didn't.
Was it some other slang term that they switched to jive talking?
Well, actually, the older brother. What's his name? The older brother.
Is it Robin? Barry?
Robin. Barry. Barry. Yeah. Barry and then Barry, Robin and Morris, the twins.
Barry
that's right.
came to the studio humming Jive Talking, and it caught on, and so they liked it so well they changed the name. Well, the original name was Drive Talking.
Ooh.
Oh, that would have been cool.
Which is what we're doing every day.
Right.
Yeah. Spectre, we're doing
Golly,
some Drive
man,
Talking.
We should have known that.
Drive Talking.
I did not know that.
And we're telling you lies, right?
I even watched the Bee Gees documentary thing a while back on
Drive Talking. I thought about you guys when I heard about that.
Yeah.
But anyway, on NASCAR circuit, Dan. I guess you missed history in the making, didn't you?
Well, this fellow, is it Ruddick? Is that his name?
Tyler Reddick.
A guy has won the first three races of the year, Bill.
Hadn't been done since the 40s.
Wow.
But, and is he on Jordan's team?
Yes, 2311.
Yeah, how about that, huh? And after got to feel good for Jordan after some unpleasantness with NASCAR, right? The last couple of years to have the top driver in the game right now.
Yeah, it's funny to see Jordan in the NASCAR circuit because he was dressed Sunday in his camouflage jeans and his pullover shirt and. That was just so funny to see somebody of his status dressed like that, but it was fun.
Nike's
proud of him.
Nike's got to be thrilled too, because camera time for Jordan means they're going to show the shoes. They're going to.
Yeah, I imagine how the shoes are going to look like. They're going to have a NASCAR on the side of them. But anyway, I don't want to talk about basketball.
I don't blame you.
That's all you have to say about that.
Yeah,
that's it. I don't want to talk about it. All right, guys. I'll talk to you later.
Take care, Spectre.
Good stuff, Spectre.
All right. We'll get to our final break of the afternoon.
Spectre knew that he was not going to say anything kind, right? And he decided.
Yeah. Well, that's isn't that what Mama said? You know, Mom said, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all.
I would never be able to talk.
It would really be a tough show. Yeah, it would really be a tough show. It's like, well, it's basketball for the next hour. let's get to that last break. Still time for you to join us here on the Monday.
Thank you, Spectre.
Yeah.
For making that decision. But yeah, we'll be back.
This is Lee County District Attorney Jessica Venturi announcing a new collaborative effort focused on
final segment of the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews, and let's get right back to the Drive Hotline. And Tex is next. Hey, Tex.
Hey, I'm not going to say anything negative about basketball. My wife said enough of it to me this weekend. But I do have a story for you. I was headed to the lake down Highway 34. There's a store about a mile from my house. And I pulled in because my wife likes Bluebell chocolate chip cookie dough, and I like mint chocolate chip.
All right.
So two fine flavors.
I pulled out those two, put them in a bag. I get to the house. And my wife says, why'd you buy pistachio?
Uh-oh.
And I was like, no, it was me that messed up because I didn't get the mint chocolate chip.
Hey, I've been That's mint chocolate chip since like the 70s, so I'm with you on that.
Well, so that's that's when I realized it's a lot like basketball. I get all excited in the beginning, but I get home and watch, and I get disappointed. So it's just – but the one difference is I can't control the basketball team. I was able to get in the car and go back and get my mint chocolate.
Oh, okay. So, there you go.
So in the end, the ending was good. A couple things about baseball. I know you're short on time.
Well, how about this?
Text, real quick. We got a few minutes.
Real quick on the ice cream metaphor there. Yeah, I thought you were maybe drawing the comparison between sometimes coaches go in the portal and they think they got themselves a mint chocolate chip.
Basketball is like
actually, they've actually went and got themselves a pistachio.
Or maybe just a carton of nails or something. I don't know. So.
Or maybe like me, I was positive I picked up mint chocolate chip. They're right next to each other.
Yeah, you must. That's the thing. You probably try. You weren't looking at the date or anything on it, were you? But I mean, I don't know.
Some of these guys.
It wasn't going to last.
I didn't mention this to you while we were talking over the weekend. When Scott and Amanda and Sarah were at the ball game, they were convinced that that they saw you in the run on Saturday. You weren't in the 5K or the something like that where you didn't tell anybody, were you? So somebody apparently looked a lot like you was out there running, and they thought for sure they saw you running.
Well, God bless that human being for looking this bad, but being dumb enough to run. So I used to run 90 feet at a time, and that was as far as I wanted to go. True story, in an alumni game one time, I hit a ball off the right field wall. They were still scrambling to get it when I got to second base, and my teammates were yelling at me to go, and I said, no, I'm not going past second. I already ran 180 feet. So I hate to run. That would never happen. Other than short, very, very short distance.
I was pretty sure that they were mistaken.
Yes. I can't wait to tell Cindy that one. tell Scott, thank you very much, though. The game, so Friday, we missed our relievers, struggled a little bit, and we got behind. But this team proved that they could swing the bats, and they got back in. And I will tell you, Frelick just missed the ball in the 11th. Was it the 11th?
10th. Bottom of the 10th. Yeah.
In the 10th. Yeah. He just missed that one. If he connects it, it's a double in the right center field, and we walk off.
Yeah, because the winner runs at second base.
Yes. So the folks on from Nebraska supposedly were on social media saying SEC who? SEC, it just means more. And then they get run ruled on Saturday and get pretty much hammered yesterday. I just they were awful quiet the last 2 days.
Oh yeah.
I think this team is the bats are coming around and the young bats.
Yeah.
Who would ever thought Salem, Alabama would produce? Those two brothers are just
something else.
They're remarkable. They hit the ball with power in all directions.
That line drive out that Mason McCrane hit was incredible.
Oh.
It was like a 109 or 110 off the bat. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah,
and that was an out.
Yeah. So, and there's six. And again, from where you sit sometimes, and I don't sit very far from the field. I thought the brothers were about 6 foot and 5'9", 5'10". They're 6'6", and they're 6'6", and 6'3".
Yep.
So maybe if I run more, I would be able to tell how tall they are. But it's so much fun to be in the ballpark. The fans are engaged all through the game, and it's such a beautiful place to be in, to be able to watch baseball. We're pretty blessed. Used not to be that way, but I'm really proud of what they've done. And, you know, I'm a big Butch fan. So, and our pitching Saturday and Sunday was just excellent.
Yeah,
so,
it was.
Just wanted to share that. I appreciate it. Love listening to the show. I was kind of interested that Spector knew about the Bee Gees. I had a girl ask me out one time to go to a Bee Gees concert, and the answer was, hell no, I'm not going to a Bee Gees concert.
They had some good stuff. They had some good stuff. You just think disco is what a lot of people think with Bee Gees, but they had a lot of good stuff that, you know, I'm not going to say all the disco stuff was terrible, but, I mean, they had a lot of stuff other than disco.
Should be dancing, Tex.
Yeah.
Obviously, you're not staying alive.
Right.
I like stuff like Lonely Days and you know, Words. And, yeah,
I can jitterbug and swing if you want. So that's the kind. I don't think I've never heard a jitterbug or a swing song from them. It's just not that. That just wasn't what I listened to growing up. So But I thought that was pretty cool. I learned a lesson.
Yeah, me too.
I know the song. That's a pretty cool story. So, anyway, I hope the basketball team turns into mint chocolate chip.
Be nice.
Yep. Good stuff, Tex. Thanks a lot. All right, we are just pretty much out of time here on the Monday Drive.
It's been melting, right? The last couple of weeks. Yeah.
Yep. Brian, let everybody know what's going on, what's coming up there at AuburnSports.com, and how folks can follow and keep up with it all.
I will be at baseball tomorrow. Justin and Caleb will be at basketball. We'll have full coverage of both. And I think fall practice starts in just a couple weeks, right?
Two weeks from tomorrow.
And the dead period's over, I believe, for recruiting. So we'll have more recruiting news as visits start up again and all that good stuff. So all that more, AuburnSports.com. Check me out on Twitter, says X at BMATAU.
All right, just a little note. Tomorrow, we will be on the air, but we'll be off a little early because of Auburn baseball. Auburn baseball normally over on Wings 94.3, but with basketball, with the pregame starting at 8:30 tomorrow night, baseball will be on ESPN 106.7 right here. So we'll have about an hour and 35, an hour and 40 minutes tomorrow. I hope you will join us then. We're out of time here, though, on the Monday Drive. That's going to do it for today. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.